This is
for a better lie.
For a better lie.
فرمود باعث تو لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, "I have been sent to complete noble manners."
بسم الله الرحمن الرحیم. السلام علیکم dear listeners, welcome back to IRB English Radio. This is the program for a better life. I am Bita, and once here again, I have the opportunity to be next to you, talk to you, and actually give you some of the things that I've learned up to here. So, as you're aware, in the last episodes, we were talking about the gratefulness and ungratefulness of human beings towards the blessings from Allah Almighty. And in this episode, specifically, we're going to talk more about the people who are grateful for blessings and actually the benefits that this gratefulness has for these people, both in the life that they're living here and the afterlife or the resurrection day. The people who know Allah, the world, man, and the day of resurrection, after passing the world of reality, hearing the truth from the tongues of creatures and existing things, trying to purify the inner self and the soul, acquiring actually divine morals, following the way of worship and servitude to Allah, doing good and being kind to people, are really grateful for the blessings and gifts of Allah. So, these people actually exploit all the apparent and hidden blessings in the right way and gain the happiness of this life and the afterlife. So do all those who follow their way. The leaders of the caravan of the human beings in this divine way are the prophets and the infallible imams. Therefore, peace be upon them. Therefore, we find the believers every day after offering the daily prayers, asking Allah to keep them on the right path in which those great people have walked. Which I'm going to recite the verse of Holy Quran. Keep us on the right path, the path of those upon whom thou hast bestowed favors, not the path of those upon whom Allah Almighty wrath is brought down, nor of those who go astray. So the prophets, peace be upon them, and the infallible imams have used all the moral and material blessings in the right way, and hence they become so close to Allah and have positions in the afterlife higher than the minds of human beings can perceive. Allah talks in the Holy Quran about the reward of those who obey Allah and His Messenger, peace be upon him and his family, in all the affairs of this life, and that they will be standing in the afterlife beside those whom Allah has bestowed favors on. And whoever obeys Allah and the Messenger, these are with those upon whom Allah has bestowed favors from among the prophets, and the truthful and the martyrs and the goodly company are they. So, as you know, up to here we talked about the concept of gratefulness. What does that mean to be grateful for blessings? And the concept of ungratefulness and the infiniteness of these blessings that Allah Almighty gave us, and talking about counting the number of blessings. And up to here, that in this part of the episode, actually, we talked about those grateful for blessings, and we're going to go for a short break, then we're going to come back, talk more about the badness of wasting blessings.
Your mercy, your love is all I need,
your love is all I need,
all I need,
all I
need, all I need,
all I need, all I need,
all I need,
all I need,
all I need,
all I need.
Welcome back to IRB English Radio. This is For a Better Life. Talking about the badness of wasting blessings, there are so many narrations, so many verses, and even so many poems, so many works in literature that we can see talking about badness of wasting blessings. As you know, a waster, according to the Holy Quran, is anyone whose his wealth, position, loss, wishes, and the rest of the blessings Allah has given to him in the satanic way and in the deviant path, which is neither reasonable nor permissible. When talking about the work and the fruits of sowing and how to spend wealth, Allah says, and pay the due of it on the day of its reaping, and waste not by excess, for Allah loves not the wasters. This means giving from agricultural production what Allah has determined is due to the poor, giving to the needy, the officials appointed over the zakat, and those whose hearts are made to incline to Islam, buying slaves and setting them free, paying the debts of needy debtors, and giving to the wayfarers what is to be spent in the way of Allah. We should not be stingy with these actually monies, nor should we waste them. The Holy Quran actually talks about those whose their wealth, positions, and powers in the way of injustice, oppression, and aggression to frighten and threaten people and to achieve their low aims. Allah says, and most surely, Pharaoh or Pharaoh was lofty in the land, and most surely he was of the extravagant. The Holy Quran also talks about the people who are not chaste, who do not refrain from prohibited lusts, who do not know save material and bodily pleasures, and who do not refrain from any aggression and vice to satisfy their lusts. The Holy Quran says, most surely you come to males in lusts instead of females, nay, you are extravagant people. The Holy Quran shows the humility and good end of the believers who submit to the prophets and their miracles. And on the other hand, it shows the state of people who become haughty, proud, and resist, and before the clear proofs and true evidence, and who prevent people from the straight path of Allah. Allah says, then we fulfilled the promise unto them. So we delivered them into whom we would, and we destroyed the prodigals. So up to here, we learned about the people who waste blessings. And there is this interesting fact that we have to put into consideration, which is blessings and wasting blessings is not only about money or wealth, but also is about the talents that you have. Hello. Think of a child, a genius, or she or he has a specific talent. If that person actually, for example, play games or indulge or actually and get involved with drugs and cigarettes and smoke and so on, then this person is wasting his or her blessings, which has no difference between wasting money and wealth. So we have to keep that important hand in mind too, that not everything is about money, not everything is about materialistic blessings. We also are talking about the blessings that we have in our hands, like our intelligence, like our family, like our health, our immunity, okay? And so many other things that we have to keep into account. So, dear listeners, I think it was all the time I had for today's episode. I hope it was useful for you. Thank you for listening to us. And don't forget, all of these episodes of the program for a Better Life are for you as triggers to think more, to seek more, and to live in a better way. You can listen to more episodes by checking our website, parstoday.ir, page Call of Islam, and program for a better life. Thank you for listening to me. It was all for today's episode. I bid you farewell. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land, he knows.
shade of palm, every closed hand in us, every sparkling tear on every eyelash in us, every thought I have and every word I share.
The United Nations Population Fund estimated that there were approximately 50,000 pregnant women in Gaza when the Zionist regime declared its war. Women have been denied adequate care, and it has frequently been impossible for them to attend medical appointments. Just 15 out of Gaza's 36 hospitals are functioning, and in all those 15 cases, only partially. With acute food shortages, most pregnant women are malnourished. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, Noor was pregnant when the Zionist regime ordered that she leave her Gaza City apartment. While moving southwards, she had a severe pain in her abdomen. The pain intensified, but she did her best to conceal it. While the pain disappeared after a while, she encountered further problems after she took shelter, along with her husband and two children, at her uncle's home in Rafah, Gaza's southernmost city. Each time there was a bombardment of the neighborhood, Noor felt more abdominal pain followed by bleeding. Worried about the possibility of a miscarriage, she went to Al Hilal Al Emirati Maternity Hospital in Rafah, accompanied by her aunt. The imaging section in the hospital was full when she arrived. There were only 5 beds available in the section and just one doctor, yet there were tens of pregnant women. After waiting for 3 hours, a nurse called out Noor's name. Noor was asked to lie down on a bed so that she could be examined. Noor told one of the staff at the hospital about the pains and bleeding she was experiencing. She was informed that such problems were probably caused by the constant stress and the fear of living through a war. Soon after that trip, Noor, then 7 months pregnant, felt that she was going into labor. She was brought to a hospital by car. As no beds were available, she had to give birth in a waiting area. Her new baby was a boy named Ahmad. He was just 1.5 kilograms in weight. Ahmad was placed in an incubator. Within the following 2 weeks, he gained 500 grams in weight. Noor said, "When I got him out of the incubator, I didn't know what he should wear. I didn't find any baby clothes in the stores. My aunt borrowed some winter clothes from her neighbors, but couldn't find enough baby milk cans for him in the pharmacies." The United Nations Population Fund estimated that there were approximately 50,000 pregnant women in Gaza when the Zionist regime declared its war during October. The women have been denied adequate care, and it has frequently been impossible for them to attend medical appointments. Just 15 out of Gaza's 36 hospitals are functioning, and in all those 15 cases, only partially. With acute food shortages, most pregnant women are malnourished. Amal had a miscarriage a few weeks after the Zionist regime destroyed her family's home. Her parents and some of her siblings were killed in the massacre. Married in 2015, Amal was told by her doctor a few years later that getting pregnant would be difficult. She had spent thousands of dollars on fertility treatment since then. It was not until 2023 that she became pregnant. Her due date was approaching when her parents were killed. The shock of that horrific crime was so acute that all she could do afterwards was recite the Noble Quran and look at the photographs of her family members on her phone. She lost her appetite. When she made herself eat anything, she vomited. 1 week after the attack on her family, Amal started bleeding heavily. She screamed. Her husband drove her as fast as possible to a nearby hospital. There, she learned that she had miscarried. Amal said, "I was killed twice," explaining that she herself felt like she died both when the massacre of her family occurred and during the subsequent miscarriage. She added, "It will be difficult for me to have any life now." Amal had been due to have a son. She had prepared a room, cot, and clothes for him. She had not yet chosen his name. Also, Sondos, 26, was 9 months pregnant when her home in Ramal, a Gaza City neighborhood, was targeted. Her husband and daughter were killed in the attack. Sondos managed to survive after being rescued from the rubble. She and her family had remained in the northern half of Gaza after the Zionist regime ordered their evacuation. They did not have any relatives or friends who could host them if they moved southwards. Sondos was brought to Gaza City's Al-Hilo Hospital. There, she gave birth to a girl through a section. She called her daughter Habiba. The baby's sister, who the Zionist regime had just killed, had the same name. The baby had to be placed in an incubator. Sondos did not have enough food or clean water over the past few months, and that had an adverse effect on the baby's weight. The hospital was unable to provide any anesthesia during childbirth, and Sondos was in acute pain. Sondos said, "I forgot the pain once I held my baby in my arms. I thank God that I was granted a new child on the day I lost my other daughter."
This is A to Z. An Introduction to Islamic Lifestyle. Today's lesson, Maintaining Brotherhood and Avoiding Hatred. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. When two believers end up in a conflict, one of them wronged the other person, right? That's why the conflict exists to begin with. It is important that one that wronged the other believer should apologize and patch up. Allah loves those who are just in their behavior. But what if that person who is at fault does not do so? What if he's stubborn? What should happen in such a situation? Should the two believers stay at odds with each other? And should the hatred prevail? Should, you know, the brotherhood and all the love and passion and affection, it be trampled over and that's fine? Well, no. Imam Muhammad al-Baqir alayhi salam, the fifth divinely appointed imam, has said, "When two men of our follower are in conflict and have broken with each other, the wronged one between them should go to his fellow and say, 'My brother, the fault lies with me,' so that they become friendly. Surely Allah is a good judge. He will administer justice to the wronged one." Isn't that amazing? You know, Islam does not let the situation of hatred prevail amongst the mu'mineen and the believers. Islam says, even if you're wronged, and let's say that you compromise and you go and apologize to your brother, while he does not deserve this apology, you're doing it for the sake of Allah, right? You proceed with it, and Allah will open up the doors of mercy for you. Welcome back, dear listeners. Today we are discussing maintaining brotherhood and avoiding hatred. So how should a believer be towards the other believer? Imam Muhammad al-Baqir alayhi salam, the fifth divinely appointed Imam, says, magnify your fellows and pay tribute to them. Do not argue with each other. Do not harm each other. Do not envy each other. Keep away from niggardliness and be sincere servants to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Imam Baqir alayhi salam adds, if a Muslim comes to another Muslim to visit him or for a request to be granted and asks permission at his house and is not received or met, on the latter is the curse of Allah until they meet. This is how Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala expects the mu'mineen and the believers to treat each other. Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salam said, he who sows the seeds of hatred will reap his sowing. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam added in another place, a believer is a gift of Allah to his Muslim brother. So if the latter makes him happy and befriends him, it is considered as the acceptance of Allah's gift. But if he breaks with him and hates him, it is considered as the rejection of Allah's gift. Allah never accepts the good deeds of any believers who intends an improper action for his Muslim brother. The eighth divinely appointed Imam, Imam Ali ibn Musa Rida alayhi salam, has said, the believers are like brothers who have the same parents. He is cursed. He is cursed. He who accuses his brothers, he is cursed. He is cursed, he repeats. He who deceives his brother, he is cursed, he is cursed. He repeats the third time. He who does not intend good for his brother, he is cursed, he is cursed. He who hides himself from his brother, he is cursed, he is cursed. He who backbites his brother. Look, these instructions are very explicit and very clear for all the believers to follow.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Islam, my dear.
Allah, my Lord.
His word, Quran.
Muhammad, Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRB English Radio. Welcome back. Yes, this is
Your Station here.
I'm Asma.
And I am Beta.
Yes, and I think we're going to have a beautiful session today.
I do agree with that.
How are you, Beta?
I'm doing well. You know, it goes as usual. Yesterday, I was coming from Tehran, and I was really happy that I would come to the arms of my mother. I can hug her.
Weekends are love, you know? Yeah. Ever since I'm going to university, I feel like weekends are a blessing.
Exactly. And I'm kind of homesick all the time whenever I go to university. And I feel like I have to talk to my mother, you know, face to face. This is a really important thing here. And I feel like she can understand me in every aspect. I talk to her. And I maybe talk to her about 6 hours, and she was like, oh, come on, that's enough.
Yeah, I cannot talk to you
anymore. Okay, go to Tehran, please.
Yeah, and she was like that. I force everyone to listen to my stories.
Exactly.
Which are nonsense to them, of course.
Yeah, they are. I actually tell all the stories that happened to me during the
week.
With
details.
Yeah, with details. That is a really important one. Yeah. The details about
that's
color.
That's the part that makes them more.
Yeah, and that is really interesting. I mean, I love this atmosphere that happens to me whenever I come to my family, talk to them, and I feel like I'm being understood.
Exactly, but not all people have the same blessing as
Unfortunately.
Unfortunately, yes. Yeah. I could see that clearly among the girls of the dorm, you know. There are many of them who do not leave the dorm, even at the weekends.
I have these friends. And I like that too.
And unfortunately, even more unfortunately, when you ask the reason, they would say that, why should I go home when they do not understand me? At least I'm alone in here.
It is so sad because I have the same thing.
Yeah, it's so sad.
And I see these people that even don't go to their home in holidays. And they're like, oh my gosh, there's no reason for me to go back there. I was miserable.
But I always wonder, you know, as parents, the one and only thing that you would love to give to your children is to give them a freedom of speech and then a way of understanding them.
You know what?
Giving them that feeling that, okay, there's a mutual understanding between us and whatever you're going to share with me, I would take it in full-heartedly with open arms.
It's a beautiful and simple theory, but it's not taken into practice in every family that we go through, okay?
Well, the reason is the thing that I wonder about.
There are so many reasons. I think the most common one is the age gap that exists in some of the families. You know, for example, you see the mother is, for example, 60 years old and the daughter is 20. I mean, there is nothing in common between these two people.
Yes, that's too much.
And the traditions, even the way they talk, are different.
Of course, I here have to mention this point that not all these age gaps are going to be, as you just said, detrimental. No, sometimes they're even good and even better because they're going to work as leaders to their children. They're going to work as a torch in the way of their journey. But unfortunately, what I believe is that the economic situation of life has made people care too much about the materialistic aspect of their living.
Yeah.
So that they no longer care about this, the time they spent with their children, you know? That's why, I guess, they do not devote a time and call it quality time. They do not spend too much of quality time with their family members. And that's why the children would back off from home and then they would resort to other individuals.
And another thing which I think we have to mention here is the families and parents that will use her.
Oh my God. Yeah. Now, this one is very sad.
Sad. And I think we have to discuss it after a short break.
I of course, would love that. Tell you were about to say something.
Yeah, and by the way, it was really bitter. Something really bitter. That some family like they're using their children in order to make their dreams come true. And they want them to be, for example, doctors, engineers, this and that, in order to be the perfect children that they wish to be. Okay.
But they do not devote time for them.
Yeah.
Like you know, you bring another person, a new creature into this life, and then what you expect them to be is just someone who's going to make your dreams come true. Yet at the very same time, you do not respect their humanity.
Exactly. And their choices.
Yeah, and their choices.
You know, I think it would take us a lot of time talking about all of the underlying reasons that these children doesn't feel like being understood at back their home. And but, you know, I think we have to focus on the dangers that are threatening these creatures, these people that doesn't have a home to be understood in there.
If you do not have a resort, if you do not have somewhere to seek refuge in, unfortunately, there would be too much of dangers lurking around for you.
And you will seek attention. You will seek someone to be there, to give you emotions, to give you love.
You would be the kind of a person who would be a love seeker from everyone.
Unfortunately. And this is a really dangerous thing. It will happen to so many teenagers.
But you know, if you talk to their parents, they would not admit that, okay, we're not understanding them. It's very hard for them to confess that I'm not understanding them.
It is. And they feel like, no, this is only simple differences between us. It's not like about understanding or something. Yeah. And, you know, I do understand these people. They cannot believe that they don't have anything common with their own children.
The interesting part about this is that in many cases, these families who do not understand their children are not in a bad a condition, you know, they do not
have financially
or even, let's say, considering the family.
Yeah.
They're not living a very bad sort of life with too much of problems. They're lost in the problems and they do not have any time to devote for their children. No, they are even maybe educated, well-educated people. They are gaining too much of money. They work until the very last hours of the night, and then when they come back home, they do not, they're tired pretty much naturally.
Yeah.
So they're not going to have too much of time to spend with their children.
And another thing that you mentioned in the last part of our episode was about this materialistic point of view that they have. They think like if they give money to their children, that's enough. Yeah,
all their needs.
Money will make perfect.
All their needs are just faced but with the money they're going to give them. But that's not true.
No, it's not.
Yeah, I do believe that in order to be parents, you have to go through too much of knowledge and studying. As in, you have to educate yourself. Why? Because you have to know how to interact with that person you are bringing into this life. So you're responsible. You're responsible toward that creature. It's not like you intend to bring someone into this life, you bring him or her, and then you forget about it all. No, it's not like that. It's just like you are bringing a new flower. Just imagine when you bring a new plant into your life, a new flower, every morning, every night, you have to check on it. You have to see how it's doing. So what about a human being?
You know, I think the first thing that you have to realize as someone who would be a parent in the future is that you have to understand the value of this responsibility on your shoulder. Some people think like, okay, DC is a child.
Yeah, everybody
it
has a child.
Grow up on his own.
They would grow with the currents.
Yeah, what does that mean? You know, having children is something really huge. It's a really huge
responsibility. It's a mission.
Yeah, it's a mission.
Guys, you have to go through too much of understanding. At least understand these poor creatures.
Yeah, and education. And nowadays, I think there are so many courses for growing a child in a good way and teaching them everything and so many other things. And it's really important to feel this responsibility on your shoulder to go for that.
You know, there's another tragic part to this story, but let's talk about it after the break. We'll be here in no time.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
So, welcome back. This is Youth Station, and I mentioned something about the tragic part of this story.
Exactly. More about the tragic
part. Is, unfortunately, due to many factors, nowadays families are not large in numbers. Like, there's only one girl, or there's only one boy, or at least if there are two large in number, there are two siblings. So now, this girl who does not feel like being understood in her house, when she comes home, she has her brother in the best way possible, in the best expectations that we're putting in here. But most of the time, they do not even have another sibling to cry on their shoulder. So their parents do not understand them. They are lonesome people. What happens is that they would seek refuge into the outside world. And the outside world is most of the time a dangerous world.
It is.
Not all people are lucky enough to have a good friend or a good coworker, a good classmate, a good dorm mate. You know what I mean? It's not a blessing that is meant to be for everyone.
And unfortunately, this phenomenon is more vast than what we think.
We're going into this extreme sort of individualization, yeah, which is a danger.
This is our responsibility to do something about it here.
Think about it. You know, what we do in here, we usually say that in 14 minutes, nothing is going to be solved. And that's true.
Yeah.
But the thing which is the main purpose of us to do in here is to bring some important issues into the platform, is to shed light on some important issues. We give you the gist, we give you a hint.
We'll and give then, you the triggers, yeah, to go for that.
Just, yeah, to think about it, because in this situation that we were talking about, like the children who are not understood with their parents, there are too much of consequences.
Yeah, being if an only child.
If you want to count the consequences, I'm sure it's going to be an unending list of factors.
Yeah, exactly. So the thing is, we cannot fix this problem here right now at this moment.
With only 14 minutes.
Exactly. But we have to feel this responsibility to do something about
like you yourself right, yeah, now as we're talking to each other. Think about it, really, how we could bring families into this point where they come and think about it. Okay, am I doing my responsibilities perfectly towards my children, towards my child?
Exactly.
Am I doing it right?
You as parents are not the only one to be blamed, okay? Yeah. And sometimes these are the children that have to do something about it.
Yeah, and the children as well. Yeah.
Have to actually put that into consideration that my parents are parents for the first time in their life.
Yeah. And then speak up.
Yeah.
You know, we can talk to each other. So if you see there's a problem with your parent, go and talk to them. If it doesn't work for once, twice, three times, I'm sure in the fourth time,
you can find
something is going to change.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
At least they're going to do something for it.
Yeah, I do agree with that. Don't be afraid of change.
Yeah.
You can be the one to start this change in your family.
Exactly. Talk to them and then ask them. Demand things from them.
Exactly.
If there's anything for you that you want from your parents, then go and say it. And also from the parents, I think, when you see your children so secluded into their solitude, yeah, into their personal zone, yes, give them that space to find themselves. Do not force yourselves and your authorities into their personal zone. But then go and talk to them. Maybe there's something they are in desperate need of telling to you.
And most of the parents feel like their position would be in danger if they get really close to their children or something like that.
No.
But, you know, you can have your position as,
exactly,
parents. At the same time that you have your own structure, you can actually talk to that children, to those children, and, you know, understand their mentality.
Exactly.
Understand their desires. Mm-hmm. What do they want? And The answer of this question altogether will help you to be a better parent.
Too much of negotiations.
Exactly.
Go and talk to each other, please.
Yeah, and you know, your experience and their innovation will make a miracle out of it.
Exactly. Would create wonders.
Yeah.
So this was all the time that we had for today's episode. I hope you just enjoyed it.
Yeah, and that's it. I bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you, dear youth, will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about this.
We'll discuss that, inshallah, in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum wa
rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Latif, 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 Allah, Allah, Allah.
the limelight. Germany probably ended 2023 with its first recession since the coronavirus pandemic, as analysts reckon data will reveal a second straight contraction in output in the fourth quarter of 2023. We have taken a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The Bloomberg news agency has covered this story and tells us more. German industrial output unexpectedly declined in November, underscoring the persistent manufacturing woes in Europe's largest economy. The Statistics Office of Germany said on Tuesday, 9th of January, production declined 0.7% from October, led by capital goods and intermediate goods. That's the sixth consecutive drop and defies economists in a Bloomberg survey who had predicted a 0.3% increase. Germany probably ended 2023 with its first recession since the coronavirus pandemic, as analysts reckon data will reveal a second straight contraction in output in the fourth quarter of 2023. Manufacturers, Germany's economic backbone, are struggling from costly energy, higher global interest rates, and a slowdown in the Chinese economy. Bloomberg economists said disappointing November production data and the recent business expectations deterioration point to a bumpy start to the year for industry in Germany. We maintain our baseline view for a slight gross domestic product increase in the first quarter of 2024, driven by a higher dynamic in the service sector. There is substantial risk, however, that a more pronounced industry weakness will drag the economy down again in the first quarter of 2024. The figures come just a day after a reading for factory orders also fell short of expectations. Additionally, with the German government straitjacketed over ramping up investment and train strikes looming recently, few economists anticipate much of a pickup this year. German railway operator Deutsche Bahn AG's attempt to halt strikes by a court injunction was rejected by Frankfurt's labor court on Monday, 8th of January. Speaking to Bloomberg Television after Tuesday data was released, Holger Schmieding, chief economist at Berenberg, claimed Germany is experiencing cyclical rather than structural issues and will bounce back as the manufacturing sector returns to significant growth in the second half of 2024. He said Germany was in recession last year, yes, but the indicators are starting to stabilize. We are bottoming out in the German economy. Meanwhile, citing the country's federal network agency, the German magazine Der Spiegel writes, households in Germany will continue to struggle with high electricity and heating costs amid the cost of living crisis. The warning comes despite the recent fall in household energy prices, which have decreased 4.5% this year compared to November of last year. The head of the federal network agency, Klaus Müller, was quoted as saying in an interview with the Rheinische Post, "The era of cheap energy is over, at least as long as we continue to consume large quantities of conventionally generated energy." Klaus Müller added, "Although wholesale electricity prices have fallen significantly compared to 2022, the price level is still higher than before the start of the Ukraine conflict," adding that nothing will change in the near future. The energy regulator noted that an average four-person household will pay €120 more in network fees per year due to the government's decision to eliminate the previously planned €5.5 billion subsidy. Müller assumed network operators will pass the price rise on to German customers, predicting Sooner or later, the cost will reach all consumers regardless of when the changes are implemented. Germany's transmission system operators reportedly announced in mid-December that the grid fees will rise from 3.12 cents per kilowatt hour in 2023 to 6.43 cents next year. Germany, which relied on Russia for 40% of its natural gas demand before 2022, was among the hardest hit by the reduction of Russian energy supplies to Europe last year. Deliveries were either significantly curtailed or entirely halted after the European Union imposed sanctions on Moscow in response to the Ukraine conflict, and the Nord Stream pipelines delivered Russian gas to Germany mysteriously blew up. The Reuters news agency has also covered this story and tells us more. German farmers started a week of nationwide protests early on Monday, 8th of January, in response to plans to phase out agricultural subsidies as the coalition government scrambles to fix its finances. Images showed convoys of tractors and trucks, some adorned with protest banners, on German roads in sub-zero pre-dawn temperatures. German police reports said that roads and highway ramps were blocked in multiple locations, causing traffic jams during the morning rush hour. Farmers have vowed to blockade major traffic and logistics routes throughout next week. On Monday, 15th of January, as they warned that an end to tax breaks will drive farms out of business. The head of German Farmers Association, DBV, asked the public for sympathy in an interview published on Monday, 8th of January. He told the Stern magazine, "We do not want to lose the support and solidarity we have received from large parts of the German population." But he said the farmers will not accept the planned tax hikes for the agricultural sector. Recent backlash from farmers prompted the German Chancellor Olaf Scholz's coalition, racing to finalize a 2024 budget draft that was delayed by a court ruling, to make unexpected changes, including modifying plans to cut subsidies for agriculture. Rather than abruptly ending the farmers' tax breaks on agricultural diesel, the subsidy will be reduced by 40% this year, by 30% next year, and will end entirely in 2026. The government also dropped plans to abolish the preferential treatment in vehicle tax for forestry and agriculture. However, the DBV said the changes were not enough and stuck with plans for protests in the coming days. Russia's Sputnik news agency has also covered the same story. According to an opinion poll by YouGov, at least 74% of the German public disapprove of Chancellor Olaf Scholz's performance, making it the highest level of dissatisfaction on record for a sitting German chancellor. At least 77% of the German public also said they place little to no trust in the way Olaf Scholz governs the country. And according to a separate opinion poll by Infotest Dimap, if elections were held today, Olaf Scholz's Social Democratic Party, the SPD, would receive just 14% of the vote, which is 2% less than last month's figure and the lowest since June of 2021. A whopping 73% of the public also said they were unhappy with the traffic light coalition government, making it the worst monthly figure since the coalition first came to power. The opinion poll comes when Germany's economy has been particularly struggling ever since the government failed to repurpose 60 billion euros left over from the COVID-19 pandemic.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Keeping the memory of martyrs alive, a necessary repetition for society. December 6, 2023. This is the part of the speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the organizers of the Congress for the commemoration of the 10,000 martyrs from the East Azerbaijan province. This meeting took place in the Imam Khomeini Husseiniyah on December 6, 2023. In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful, all praise is due to God, Lord of the worlds, and peace and greetings be upon our Master, Muhammad, and his pure progeny, particularly the remnant of God on earth. I would like to thank all the dear brothers and sisters here for this useful, necessary action to keep the memory and names of the outstanding martyrs of Azerbaijan and Tabriz alive. They are, of course, unforgettable. Once again, you have spoken about them in a better, higher, clearer fashion. What you did is very good and very appropriate. Of course, there was a bit of a time gap between the first commemoration ceremony, which was held several years ago, and this commemoration ceremony. It is appropriate for these kinds of measures, commemorations, tributes, and remembrances to be repeated more frequently. In the same way that we honor the memory of the martyrs of Karbala every year during the month of Muharram. That has been repeated over 1,300 years, and it is not a mundane repetition. It is one of the necessary, useful repetitions for today's society and for the society of the future.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Well, there are plenty of admirable things to say about Tabriz and Azerbaijan. And I have spoken about this many times during our annual meetings. Regarding the martyrs, the statements of the respected Friday prayer leader and the honorable commander of the IRGC today in this meeting were very good and complete. Praise God, these gentlemen have paid attention to all of the recommendations that I wanted to give and the ones I usually mention. And you have taken action on many of them. Let me just say that one of our duties is to be aware of ourselves, the identity of ourselves. The Iranian nation should not forget its identity. If it forgets its identity, it will be harmed. It will be slapped in the face and fall behind.
Allah, I wanna finish. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pourreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alami, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Yemenis from all walks of life took to the streets of the capital Sana'a to decry the US-Britain strikes that targeted several cities across Yemen early Friday in support of Israel. They also denounced the US-drafted resolution on the Red Sea that was adopted by the United Nations Security Council shortly before the strikes. The protesters also reaffirmed their support for their country's pro-Palestine operations despite the Western aggression.
The strikes launched by America and Britain were aimed at discouraging the Yemenis from carrying out military operations in the Red Sea. But Mr. Abdul Malik al-Houthi was clear in his speech that no one would be able to stop the Yemenis from supporting their Palestinian brothers. We in the Popular Front on Palestine appreciate what our Yemeni brothers are doing. And in 75 years, we have not found anyone who stood with us like the Yemeni people, despite the American-British threat.
The protesters chanted slogans in support of the Yemeni armed forces' operations against Israeli-linked ships in the Red Sea. They stressed that despite the Western aggression against their country, they will not back down from their position in supporting the Palestinian people, whatever the cost.
The Yemeni armed forces were anticipating these strikes, and our position is clear and will not change, that we will continue to prevent Israeli-linked ships from reaching the occupied ports until medicine and food are allowed to enter Gaza, and the genocide committed by Israel is stopped. The American-British strikes violated Yemen's sovereignty, but did not affect the capabilities of the Yemeni army.
The strikes followed the UN Security Council's adoption of a draft resolution submitted by Washington and Japan that demanded an immediate end to attacks by Yemeni forces on Israeli-owned or Israeli-bound ships in the Red Sea. Yemeni officials have strongly condemned the strikes and vowed a painful response to them.
The crowd here is sending a strong message to the US and the UK. The demonstrators vow that the aggression against their country will not go unpunished. They also say operations against Israeli-linked vessels in the Red Sea will end if Israel puts an end to its genocidal war on Gaza. Abdul Latif Loshali, Sana'a.
It has been a historic 2 days at the International Court of Justice, where the former apartheid state of South Africa instituted proceedings against the Israeli occupation for their genocide against the Palestinian people. South Africa made a compelling case, evidencing clearly that the Genocide Convention has been violated under several categories. What's up?